there was a world before the Jordan brand. There was a world before Nike owned everything, it seems, where Converse was really it. Dan Bernstein with you, Sports Radio 670, The Score, Will Perdue sitting in, as he does every one of our Last Dance Bulls Mondays. Now, the first basketball shoe, when I played on the sixth grade team at Walden, I remember being so excited to have the low-top Dr. J's. And the Converse shoes, it was a red and there was a blue. And the Dr. J low-top Converse was it. And I was all excited to have them because that was really the thing. So for you, Will, obviously playing at a high level at a very young age, do you remember like your first special basketball shoe?
Yeah, it was the Dr. J Converse. I mean, it was basically just a rubber sole and a leather upper. But it's kind of interesting that Michael mentions that, because anybody in our age, and I'll be 55 this year, you talk to anybody, and you go back to when we were in like 8th grade, 9th grade, 10th grade, the best shoe on the market back then was the Adidas Top 10. That was like the first, you know, as you said, the Dr. J was probably the most popular, but I don't know if that was necessarily a basketball shoe. That was basically a leather version of Converse. What was the canvas?
The Chuck Taylor?
Yeah, that was basically a leather version of the Chuck Taylor, and they just changed the name and called it the Dr. J shoe. And then came the Weapon, as we saw in The Last Dance, that Magic wore and Larry wore. But back in, so that would have been, you know, when I was ninth grade, I mean, that was in late 70s. It was called the Adidas Top 10.
And that had a very high ankle, right? It was a deep boot on that.
But I was able to order a pair because I had to start ordering my shoes in sixth grade. I couldn't just walk into a store. I mean, it literally took 3 months to get my shoes. But I was able to order these Top 10s, and they were like, it was unbelievable. So I understand where MJ comes about, because they were the best shoe out there by far. And it was like, I got that. And people were like, oh, my God, you got an Adidas Top 10. Those things are awesome. They're so expensive. And I'm like, my shoes are always expensive. What are you talking about? You know, and that was interesting that, you know, and even back then you had the Dr. J's, but nothing like what happened with the explosion of Michael Jordan. I found what David Falk said to be interesting, in the sense that they marketed him as a separate entity, which had never been done in basketball because it was a team sport. And Nike said, okay, fine, we're going to sign you, but we hope that after 4 years, you've sold $3 million in shoes.
It was $126 million after a year, right?
I mean, I'd say somebody made the correct call on that one. Now, let me also tell you what Michael Jordan did for everybody else, and this is what people aren't thinking about. So my assistant coach at Vanderbilt became Ed Martin, who coached at Tennessee State. And Too Tall Jones, who everybody knows is a football player, had played basketball. He had a great relationship with him. But he also coached Truck Robinson, who wore Nikes. And he became a Nike guy and got in on the ground level when Nike first came out and got a bunch of Nike stock, which a lot of the original coaches who became Nike schools got. And I remember the first time I went over to his house, even though he came to Vanderbilt, which was a Converse school because of C.M. Newton and his association with USA Basketball, which was also Converse. I went to his house for the first time, and he opened up his garage door, and he literally had 200 pairs of Nike shoes of every single size you could imagine. Because what they used to do for all their shareholders, when a new shoe came out to help publicize the shoe, they'd send the shoes out and have these guys give them away. But also at the same time, because of Michael Jordan, as it got a little later, he saw his stock blossom, explode. Mm. He basically retired on his Nike stock because he had so much, because he got in on the ground floor, and most notably because of the Jordans.
God, that's like the end of Forrest Gump when Lieutenant Dan shows up having invested in a fruit company and it was and it was Apple. I mean, that's amazing. You know, the cultural aspect too. When you said, when David Falk talked about how we marketed him like a tennis player or like a golfer, like one of these individual sports, and there's something about shoes that connected and forever changed because of Jordan, and it was almost this childlike innocence that people had of wanting to walk have your feet touch the earth in the same shoes that this man wore, and the worship for an athlete in a way that we've got a built-in cynicism now, even with the greatest athletes, no matter who it may be, you know, LeBron James or any great individual athlete. We still understand that, you know, he's a person and the people are people. But this was before then. There was still a wonderment. There was still a worship where people there was a compulsion. People who could not afford these shoes had these shoes. And you remember there was the news story, and I forgot how this happened, but there was especially in Chicago, it was random, I don't know if it's random, but somebody was murdered, and the story came out that someone was murdered for their shoes. And it was a national level story. Chicago on the West Side shot for their Michael Jordan sneakers. And it was a huge story. I mean, it kept going. And I was working at Channel 2 in the summer of 89. And I remember when it happened, I was in the morning meeting, and I was actually with the crew that went out. That it was, they sent Burley Hines and a photographer and a writer named Edie Turowitz and me. And they said, go to the Robert Taylor homes and go do this story about are people getting shot for their, and like, how do you do that? How do you write this story? But it was this incredibly sensationalized thing. And we had to go to the stores and talk to people about, you know, are you price gouging the Jordans, or where, and talk to people on the street. You know, they showed the scene from Do the Right Thing. Also came out in the same summer, 1989, was when Do the Right Thing came out. And that was part of the Jordan shoe culture and bugging out. And you saw Martin Lawrence right there about, you know, with getting his, and it was incredible that the way it was pictured. You know, there's really no getting around. It's like, well, look what's going on in the black community, these people who can't afford these shoes, and they have to have their shoes. And it was all a little uncomfortable, where they didn't even really know the facts of the case. People didn't even know for sure that somebody was killed for their shoes. It may have just so happened that somebody got shot and killed, and someone happened to take the Jordans after the fact, and people were able to determine causality from that. But it went wild, man. It went, that aspect of it, was a Chicago story. It was a national story. We don't even know the level to which it was actually true, but people wanted to believe it because it fed in to the power of the narrative of how badly people wanted the shoes.
Well, that's how popular they were, because we always would talk about that periodically amongst ourselves on the team. People realized, I'll never be able to play like Mike. I'll never be able to make his much money. I'll never have the smile. I'll never be as popular. But my connection is, I can wear the same. And it was. Unlike golf clubs that are a little different for the pros, they, you know, those were the exact shoes that Michael Jordan wore. You could buy the exact. There was no alteration. It was the exact shoe that Michael Jordan wore. Now, his specific shoe was made on a specific last, but it was the same exact shoe that anybody could buy in any Foot Locker, in any athletic store. There was no, it wasn't different by any means. It was the same exact shoe. That was the connection. And you were exactly right. I mean, it wasn't just, you know, the thing about the kid being murdered. It was about people were being robbed for their shoes if they had a specific Michael Jordan shoe. Kids were being robbed. I mean, they would be robbed at gunpoint, and all they would do was take their shoes. They wouldn't take their money. They wouldn't take their wallets. They would take their shoes, and that was it, and run off because of the value on the secondary market. Two things, Dan. One, when I played with Michael, and this is the other thing, you talk about how he laced up his own shoe. Michael literally, before every game, wore a brand new pair of shoes every single game. They would slide the Johnny Ligmanowski would slide the box of shoes over to him. Michael would take them out of the box and take the paper out of them and lace them up. That was kind of like a thing for him. He wanted to lace them. There was a certain way he wanted to do it. I don't know, like some people love to, you know, do laundry. He loved to lace his shoes prior to the game. And he would put a new pair on, and as soon as the game was over, he would hand them to Johnny Liggs or to Tim Hallam, and boom, they're gone because they were donated. They went to a charity. They went to somewhere. I always asked him for two pairs of shoes every year, two pairs. And what I did was, instead of giving them away as trophies, when I had my basketball camps back where I grew up in Merritt Island, Florida, the MVP, the best camper of the week, got an autographed pair of Michael Jordans. And when I would give those shoes out, they were A, worn by Michael Jordan, B, signed by Michael Jordan. These kids would literally start weeping because of the fact they obviously all knew who Michael Jordan was. They all loved basketball. And then they got an autographed, game-worn pair of shoes from Michael Jordan. And I get emails, I get text messages, I get my mother who runs into some kid, which is now an adult, that says, hey, I went to Will Purdue's basketball camp and I still have Michael Jordan's pair of shoes because I was the MVP of the camp. Now, to take it one step farther, I also would give Scottie Pippen's autographed shoes to the defensive player of the week. But I have my son now is 16 years old. One of his really good friends, his job, this is what he does, and he makes hundreds of dollars a month. He buys and sells new and worn shoes on some app on his phone, and that's all he does. He buys a pair, he shoves them in his closet, he waits for the value to go up, and he turns around and sells them again. And that's how he makes his money. That's his job. That's how that culture has developed.
That's amazing that somebody could actually have a job as a literal trader of shoes like any other commodity. Like somebody could be, instead of trading wheat futures or currencies, that shoes have gotten to that value. And you mentioned too, Will, that Michael Jordan took his mother's advice to say to take that meeting with Nike and obviously change the meeting that changed the world. There is advice that his mother gave him that he did not take that is covered briefly. And I wanted to add some context as someone who was living in North Carolina as it was all happening regarding Jordan's refusal to say anything or to weigh in publicly regarding Harvey Gantt's candidacy against Jesse Helms. They touch on some things there, but I think people need to know more about why it was such a big deal and why Dolores Jordan really wanted him to say something. I want to get into that with a little bit of my personal experience being right in the middle of that particular political race and in a pretty polarized place as it was all going on. You're listening to Sports Radio 670 The Score. It is our Bulls Monday. Will Purdue is sitting alongside me. I'm Dan Bernstein, and we've got plenty more to come. Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Hello, fitness friend.
Tomorrow night at 7, The Score will replay Terry Bohr's final show before retirement. Recorded live January 5th, 2017 from the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage at The Score Studios.
Just tired of you, dumbass.
Starring a jam-packed lineup of Score hosts from the past and present.
I've closed out the number of these shows with Dan saying that everybody have a great night and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Well, I won't be talking to you tomorrow. I won't be talking to you again.
Don't miss Terry Bohr's final show, re-airing tomorrow night at 7, right here on Sports Radio 670 The Score, Chicago's sports station.
I'm mad at all of you!
This segment was brought to you by True Green.
Time.
Today's reality has forced us all to grapple with what's important and what isn't. And what will always be important is family and health. Unfortunately, snoring, sleep apnea, and nasal breathing problems have a direct impact on those two things we hold close. Living with any one of these issues compromises your quality of life, and that affects your whole household. It's not always easy to take action to change that, but Advent is going to help with a free virtual consultation. There's no cost and no commitment, and you don't have to worry about insurance or missing work to find out if Advent can solve your problem. During your virtual consultation, you'll chat one-on-one with a sinus and sleep specialist to find out exactly what you need to know. Text the word ADVENT to 797979 to schedule your free, zero-strings-attached virtual consultation. I'm Dr. Madan Kandula. We won't be able to do this forever, but we're doing it now. Because Advent knows when you breathe well, you live better.
Omaha Steaks is open in Schaumburg, Naperville, Oak Brook, and Orland Park. Available for curbside pickup are the most tender, the most flavorful steaks you've ever had. You can only get steaks of this quality from Omaha Steaks, America's original butcher. And how about this deal? If you stop in today and tell them Dan Bernstein sent you, your purchase of $49 or more will include 8 free quarter-pound Omaha Steaks burgers. That is 2 free pounds of meat. But you have to tell them Dan Bernstein sent you. You call in, you place your order, it is ready when you arrive. Omaha Steaks is a fifth-generation, family-owned company with over 100 years of expertise in selling perfectly aged beef, hand-cut by master butchers in the heartland of America. So we're all cooking more. The weather is improving. I noticed just from taking a short walk yesterday, there's a lot of fabulous grilling smells that were rising in the Chicago Sunday. So get in on this. Omaha Steaks in Schaumburg, Naperville, Oak Brook, Orland Park. Call ahead. It'll be ready for you. $49 or more, you get 8 free quarter-pound Omaha Steaks burgers when you tell them Dan Bernstein sent you.
Okay, small businesses are grappling with the impact of these uncertain times and looking for resources. That's why Dell Technologies assembled an all-star lineup of podcasters to create the first-ever virtual conference to share advice and inspiration for small businesses. Dell Technologies is here, from keeping you connected while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams to providing relevant content for businesses. Search Dell Technologies Small Business Podference on radio.com, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts.
Some of us need to rely on our cars more than ever to safely get to work, the grocery store, and appointments. Whether you need a car now or plan to buy someday soon, Cars.com has your match and all the latest deals. Shop from home. Cars.com now features nearly 2 million cars ready for home delivery. Set up virtual appointments with local dealers to tour your favorites. Save the car you want. Click to buy when you're ready. Yep, car shop from your couch. With confidence on Cars.com.
Switch to Sprint and get our best unlimited deal ever. 4 lines of unlimited for just $100 a month. Plus, we're including 4 amazing iPhone 11s on us when you trade in iPhone 6s or newer in any condition. Visit Sprint.com, call 800-SPRINT-1, or come see us in our stores. Phone after $29.17 per month credit for 18 months credit. Apply within 2 bills. If canceled early, remaining balance due. Requires new account. Unlimited basic after 7/31/21. Pay $35 per month per line with autopay. Data deprioritization during congestion. Coverage and offer not available ever. Excludes taxes, fees, and roaming. Speed maximums. User rules. $30 activation fee and restrictions apply.
For kids, K-A-R-S, cars for kids, 1-877 cars for kids, donate your car today, 1-877 cars for kids, K-A-R-S, cars for kids, 1-877 cars for kids, donate your car today.
To learn more about our programs and to donate, visit us online at carsforkids.com. Remember, that's cars with a K. Pickup is quick and easy. You'll also get a vacation voucher and maximum tax deduction.
1-877 cars for kids. K-A-R-S cars for kids. 1-877 cars for kids. Donate your car today.
Also accepting boats, motorcycles, RVs, and real estate donations.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score
and 670thescore.com,
Chicago Sports Station.
I'll be honest that when it was reported that Michael said, you know, Republicans buy sneakers too, you know, for somebody who was at that time preparing for a career in civil rights law and in public life and knowing what Jesse Helms stood for, you would have wanted to see Michael push harder on that. On the other hand, he was still trying to figure out how am I managing this image that has been created around me, and how do I live up to it?
That was President Barack Obama on Last Dance last night on ESPN talking about the infamous line that Michael Jordan last night tried to excuse, I guess, as just some kind of locker room joke. Will Perdue is with me. I'm Dan Bernstein, Sports Radio 670 The Score. And I think we get distracted when we worry about that line. Republicans buy shoes too. Take that piece out of it for a moment. Whether how he meant it, whatever he meant, that's really not the point. The point is that you heard Michael Jordan's mother, and you know that she wanted him to say something publicly in the middle of this heated senatorial race in North Carolina between Harvey Gantt and Jesse Helms. Harvey Gantt was the former mayor of Charlotte, a black man who was immensely popular in the state. I was living in North Carolina at the time. And people might say, yeah, well, you're at Duke University, you know, some island, some liberal elite school. People have to remember Duke was private and elite, no doubt, but it was not in any way an island of liberalism. So I was seeing it from both sides, because Duke is also the school of Richard Spencer, Stephen Miller, Elizabeth Dole, the law school of Richard Nixon. And believe me, I had meetings with deans in which I heard a dean, this woman referred to like, well, I'm trying to help you with your internship, but I'm dealing with an affirmative action Chicago employee, it seems. I'm like, oh, really? Okay. That's just how people talked. So I was right in the middle of activists for Harvey Gantt and people who were supportive of Jesse Helms. You got to realize, Jesse Helms is not just some typical mainstream GOP mashed potato face chud. He was a horrible, virulent, outspoken racist. He worked against the Civil Rights Act of 1964. He was against the civil. He didn't want black people to vote. He didn't want to give them a constitutional right to vote. And not only that, during that campaign, Jesse Helms mailed out tens of thousands of notices, fake notices, to black voters telling them you're not eligible to vote, and even threatened that they would be arrested if they tried to vote. It was like 150,000 people, which was like a tenth of the number of people who ended up voting. He sent notices to black people telling them it was illegal for them to vote. I mean, this was the, I mean, obviously he'd fit in right now just fine, but back then, it's not just some Senate race. And his incredible power in the Senate, the committees that he sat on, this was a titan of the Senate. And this was a major national political race where so much funding was coming in from outside forces as well. And the fact that Jordan didn't say anything, forget about that comment. That comment made it ugly. But it was a huge deal. And people say, please, 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 Michael, say something. Because the polling was neck and neck. And what it might have done to change the arc of history, to keep Jesse Helms from another Senate term in power. No one knows what it could have done. But there's a lot of people that speculate with a couple of simple words, there were enough people in the middle that might have been swayed. So I think the documentary gave it a little short shrift. They played a couple of comments. There was one segregated schools comment, and then his No Joy in Mudville, famously, that comment. But I wish people understood the significance, the magnitude of Jordan, of the cultural and political forces at that time, and the danger and the perniciousness of Jesse Helms, because he was that bad.
And Dan, I agree with you 100%. We all wish that Michael would have said something. But I will also say this, okay? This doesn't sound very good, but you went to Duke. I went to Vanderbilt. So some listening may look at it as elitist. I went there on a basketball scholarship, all right? I went there to play basketball. But my parents wanted me to focus on education, and that's why I went there. The schools I looked at were Vanderbilt, Purdue, Virginia, Georgia Tech. All educational institutions, all focused on education. I truly looked at myself as a student athlete. So like you, I saw it from all sides. One of the biggest things I learned about at Vanderbilt was protest. Students had a voice. We need to change. This was all new to me. I grew up in Florida, came from a public school. But let's also be honest here. There was no social media. There was no Twitter, anything of that nature. Back then, and I also learned this at Vanderbilt, you were looked at as an athlete. So quite honestly, I went to Vanderbilt. I was looked at as less than worthy because I was an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
Right, wrong, or indifferent. But we also were kind of led down the path, as was Michael Jordan and everybody else. And the funny thing is, you still get this today, but not to the extent, because players today now are using their name as a way to change our culture, which I think is great. But you still have people that are like, hey, you're an athlete. Keep being an athlete. Stay in your lane. But that's what we were taught and how we thought we were being perceived back then. That was not our job to talk about politics. That was not our job to voice an opinion. We kind of were led to believe that people just wanted us to talk about sports and to stay in our lane. Whether Michael really believed that or not, I don't know. I understand his mother coming out and asking him to do something. But he didn't want to voice that opinion. Listen, he said on the show, but he also told us about it, in the fact that thing about Republicans buy shoes as well was just in jest, to be funny. More of a deflection. Let's move on. Let's talk about something else, because that wasn't an area at the time he felt comfortable talking about. And he even said, hey, is that selfish of me? Yeah. But the last thing, and this is Michael to a T, the last thing he wanted was something like this, distracting him or taking away from what he was doing as a basketball player. I know the gambling thing became an issue that started taking away from the brand of Michael Jordan. But that was also a learning lesson from him. But he knew better. He knew this was a hot topic. He did not want to touch it with a 10-foot pole. But he also talked about now, which we probably didn't know back then, he sent money in. He supported him. But he didn't want to vocalize his support because of the kickback that he thought he would get. And he thought that would attract him. And then he would be being asked questions about politics, about Jesse Helms, about Harvey Grant. And he didn't want that. As he said, was it selfish? Yeah. But he just wanted to focus on basketball, and he just wanted to stay in his comfort zone, in his little bubble.
And he was being very honest about it last night, and I couldn't really tell if he regretted it. I mean, he wasn't asked directly if there were any regrets for not saying it.